Hey, this is Huck. Subscribe to Thorin's YouTube channel.
I want to ask you for like a funny story. So I'll give you an example of the type I mean. Like, I'll give you a very brief one. I once did a match for E-League when it was on like American TV, and we were doing the CS Major, right? And because I was used to doing loads of CS events, one of the best things about CS when it's not on TV is you can obviously play with the time and the length of the segment. Like, it doesn't really matter if they say a throw now. You could take 15 seconds extra and say something more because it's on Twitch and they just press the add button, right? But because TV really is like, look, when that number hits that number hit that number, it's going off. There was once at a time on the major, right, where I've just watched the whole best of three, Calaris, right? We've already, because we're on TV, we're just doing a 30-second post best of three segment, right? So I'm already going to get to say fuck all about this game, right? And I'm at the end of the desk, so it's me, Richard Lewis, Moses, and I'm there. So Richard said his thing, he's gone to Moses, he comes to me, right? I'm not even trolling. He says something mental to me, like the biggest open-ended question ever, like, you know, and Thorin, so what do you think about the way, like, economically, you know, they approach that map, like on T-side of train, usually, he asks this massive question, and when he's about to finish it, the producer in my ear, because there's no time left, goes, don't answer that, throw. So I go, and I'm thinking, but he's just asked a massive question, and so I have to actually for real just sort of go, yes, Richard, and then let it just go back to him like I'm a moron, right? But it was one of those ones where in that moment, like, I have to just take it for the team, you know, we're on TV, whatever, like the guys told me there's no time, I get it, right? Do you have a good, give me a good desk story, Calaris. What's like a, what's a ridiculous story in your career? You must have a good one.
Gosh, oh, I mean, that's rough, right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, the what we just had was AWC is that we had two productions going on at the same time for every tournament. So actually, we also had these hard cutoffs where all of a sudden our production is throwing to the other production.
Right.
So it was every single time I'm throwing to the game or whatever, I have a hard cutoff 10 seconds. So actually, I think I'm very adept at saying to the guys, you got to wrap it up. And then, like, and I've got to do like a little intro and I can hit second every single time. But funny desk segment scenarios, I don't know.
Because with some of the people you've had, Todd, Rotterdam, you must have some good ones.
I'm trying to think. I mean, this might be too hard a question for me to think up off the fly. A lot of the times I'm kind of just very kind of down the line and I'm getting things from people and I can't think of anything, mate. I'm trying to think. Maybe we can come back to it if I can think of
something.
It's all
good. Sorry. It's all good. What about, I use someone where, I alluded to it earlier, but I actually do think, I know my mate Monty complains about this all the time, that's why he doesn't cast anymore. He thinks one of the problems in the industry is like, as a career progression, it doesn't really exist. Like, I gave that example before. If you worked on like British football, American football, ice hockey, if you work on one of these sports, actually to become a commentator is your end goal. Like, you do that gig and you try to do it for like 50 years. And at the end, you know, you're like a legend and then you retire just because you can't do the job anymore or you don't want to. Like, usually that is like the ultimate job. It gets paid very, very well. You can get millions in American TV, for example, you know. But the problem in esports is it's viewed almost as a stepping stone in the industry. Like, the idea is you become like a commentator, but then after that you become, I don't know, a producer person, or you work higher up. Maybe you're the talent manager who hires the people for ESL, or then you go off and you go anywhere within the corporate structure, or you work for the developer. Maybe you go to Blizzard or Valve or Riot. A lot of people see it as like you do it for a while, and then afterwards when you get sick of that game, maybe you move up and you go on. Me and you have both done this thing where we've done the on-camera thing for many, many, many years. Do you ever feel like there's a limitation as to what you can do? Do you want your role to be more expansive? Would you like to be like, say, I mean, you're doing a bit of it with EWC, would you like it to be like I was half producer and I can sort of put the show together and run some of it and decide some of the people? Do you feel like, is there enough room to grow? Is there space to be ambitious for you?
It's a good question, because at EWC, I sort of, I was about to say debate my own mortality, but that's not, I'm not painting it grim in a grim way, but just like, what is there left to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. I think that, the helping produce thing, like, I think there is a lot of value as a desk host that has been in for so many years. Or just, I mean, even as a commentator as well, when you understand the flow of shows and understand what people would like to watch, I think there's a lot of value in imparting that knowledge on the production flow, the rundown, how things could work out. The only problem is, really, is that you say, what's the natural progression? I mean, for me right now, I love doing what I do. So maybe, again, if you know, something else is on the horizon, like, for example, if you know, Deadlock works out or whatever could be on the horizon works out, I love being talent. I really enjoy just being, you know, being able to enthuse the excitement of the game on the broadcast and being able to do it that way. And honestly, if you're going to any other position in esports that isn't this talent role, say, for example, if you become a producer or stuff like that, you're making a lot less money than you are currently doing this,
yeah.
which is a problem. So what's the incentive to do it other than you've ran your course and you know you can no longer be talent? But then again, I do think that some producers that we have or whatever would benefit greatly from having done this job. So you're in this catch-22 yes. of like, because a lot of people that you have as producers or people behind the camera and stuff like that, they don't get.
Yes.
They do not understand what it is like to actually be talent. I mean, even something as crazy as some of the talent that I've worked with recently were given advice by people that have never been talent. And these advices really backfired and became like almost a meme about these particular talent, right? And it's like, guys, why would you ever listen to these people who have never been front of camera? So that can be a tricky slope. But I mean, in terms of progression, where I want to do next or something like that, I'm loving this. Again, I did consider what's next, and it's like, what's even the point of what's next? Because who knows? Just keep being talent, I guess.
Well, I mean, like, I think people have established from this interview, you really love games like PUBG and StarCraft. You have an authentic reason to keep coming back. But I would ask essentially a version of the Richard Lewis question from 10 years ago, which goes like, obviously there are games like Counter-Strike, which you could pick up pretty quickly. Also, by the way, if you notice, despite the fact Counter-Strike has a reputation as being really hardcore and toxic, I actually think it's the most welcoming of any game to other talents.
So.
Yeah. Think about people like Shox. When they come in, we just welcome them in because we know they're really good. Like, I think when people like Tech Girl came in, essentially, I think part of it's probably you have to come in with the right attitude. You can't come in like put it this way. I can tell you that is what happened to D-Man that fucked him up when he was in the ESL. He stupidly did an interview where he sort of bragged like, hey, I conquered League and COD. And it sort of put people's backs up. They were like, hey, whoa, you haven't done that yet in CS. So the difference is if you came in and you just came in like, hey, I've always respected CS, you know, guys, I'm here to learn. I think people would love you, mate. And there's so many events as well. Is it something you think about when you see these other big games? Or you see, like you said, Deadlock's on the horizon. Do you think to yourself, maybe this is a game for me? Or maybe I can branch out into another game. Is it something you're conscious of?
This is going to sound a little bit big-headed, but I think that I could... let's use CS for a second here. I think I could come into CS and do a good job, but also I'd probably be welcomed in because I kind of know those people already,
yes,
right?
That helps
so
too.
That definitely helps. If I suddenly appeared on a desk or whatever, and I was alongside some of the people or whatever, they'd be like, oh, we know you. Hi. We're going to make you feel welcome. In terms of like League and stuff like that, I don't think so. I did entertain the idea of doing Dota for a while because I really enjoyed it. But it's back to the gonna sound big headed part. I think that I am good enough and malleable enough. I genuinely believe, in terms of DES hosting, I'm one of the best DES hosts in the world. And I kind of dislike the idea that, you know, things like the esports awards have happened and whatever. I've never been nominated because I just do two small games in inverted commas, right?
Like, by the way, to win those awards, you basically have to do League or CS or Dota. Those are just the games. Yeah. I can tell you, I was on the panel. They're the only games that win, mate, pretty much. They're just it's reality.
I have a lot of opinions about things like the esports awards. I find it ridiculous for a few reasons. But anyway, I think that I could easily plug into some of these games, and if I just want to do the games I enjoy, and if a game becomes big and I enjoy it and I'm part of it, great. If not, it's okay for me. I make a very good living off the back of this. It's taken a bit of a hit this year because of the way in which esports is right now, even though we've got EWC and things like that, but I will be wherever the games I enjoy take me, basically. So,
by the way, on that point, though, when you say that, even though you're doing it to be British and self-deprecate, like, I'm being a bit big-headed. As you said, you did it for 14 years in multiple massive games, mate. Like, when you put that many reps in that many hours, you almost should think I'm an expert or I'm one of the best ever. Like, I even did more gigs than anyone else or more things. It's like, when I even did the IME Sports thing, part of that is because I had a realization a few years ago, mate. I've spent my entire adult life in these games. Like, this isn't some shit where I'm fucking around and I just, you know, got popular one year or people are gassing me up that I'm really good. I put, like, my whole life siphon away. Like, at that point, by the way, I'd be pretty shit if I wasn't any good at the end of it all. Hopefully I have picked up a few skills, point. You know. I'd hope after a couple of decades you get good. So even though you say it like that, that is actually sort of a perspective to see the game from. Like, a lot of your people you're working with now, maybe they are 2 or 3 years in the game and they're really good now at this game, or they're good at this particular thing, but you have a bigger perspective when you've done it as many years as you have, right?
Yeah, I mean, I tallied up actually before this interview because I was curious. I tallied up how many events I've done across the time.
Come on, hit
about
me.
It's about 200 or something like that.
Yeah, that is mental. Which,
yeah, and I keep every single lanyard. I still have the box upstairs. So one day I'm just going to pin them all to a wall or something after I'm completely done. But that's, yeah, it's a lot of events. And obviously at that point, I think one thing that's really nice as well is that I think if it was just in StarCraft, I think I would, again, be nowhere near as good as I am now. I think that working with as many different talent lineups as I have, or yes, different people, and gotten different perspectives, even something as simple as going to PUBG, listening to other people's phrasing of like how they would frame a certain situation, okay, and then taking back to my other games. Even things as simple as that, I think, have kind of molded me and melded me into the talent I am now. And again, I watch loads of other esports in general anyway. So I try and assimilate where I can. I even assimilate from some like niche scenarios. Like, you must know of Sid Waddell in darts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, a phenomenal commentator. Sure. Dead now, unfortunately. But, you know, just kind of listening to some of those things. I'm not a really big football guy, so I don't really listen to football, but stuff like darts commentary, there's things that you
can, I know what you mean. The problem is, if you're only in a game, you yourself can start to think, I'm not actually like good at what I do. I'm just good at this game. I know a lot about the game. But like you're saying, there are so many things that essentially, once you've like seen the way broadly, like the Miyamoto Masashi quote, you can see, you can steal things from other areas that have nothing to do with PUBG or whatever, right? Like you say, yep. Even the framing, how you think about something or set something up is totally different.
Yeah, and I'm trying my best when it comes to like being on these events or whatever to impart a lot of that on the other guys, right? Because in apart from in StarCraft, a lot of the other talent that I work with now have not even been in the time,
yes,
I've been in, right? Yes. So I try and listen to what they're doing and see if I can kind of like give them nudges in the right direction and stuff like that. And I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that I'm helping the next generation.
But I've got a question like that I could ask you about. I'll give you an example. When I recently was doing some Valorant context, I was working with that caster Gio, who was working in Valorant and Rainbow Six and stuff. I had a lot of people on those shows where, because obviously Valorant is quite a new game, I was having people on who'd only done a couple of years. And one of them I had actually is one of the people you work with in PUBG, Paper Thin, that guy, American guy, if everyone remembers. And what it made me realize was a similar realization. I was like, bro, even though these people have only actually done essentially like 1 or 2 years professional work, they've had to actually just be thrown in the deep end. The difference was, it took us longer sometimes to get to the top, but you got to work through all these levels of the industry. Now in certain games, like some of them, there is no tier 2 and tier 3 scene. You just jump from being an online cop to like you're at the LAN and like you're with someone like me or you, and you have to just be good immediately. Like, in a way, their world's also totally different. So I think you're right on. In some ways, I might have found it insulting if like Red Eye had tried to tell me something back in the day, but like, to be fair, in your case, like, you can actually probably help these people get up to speed really quickly, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping that's the case, because as there is definitely people coming in who, because as you say, there is just not, in some of these games, there just isn't the way to get the reps in, especially at home. So if you can try and just kind of nudge people in the right direction and stuff like that, then it's kind of invaluable. And a lot of people that are coming in now, like that are a bit younger, they are very willing to listen.
Cool.
I've been very happy to see that people are willing to listen and people are willing to work on some of the stuff. So I mean, maybe eventually there's somebody that comes along and isn't happy to listen to it, whatever. But I do make it very apparent from the early onset of like when I'm going into like some of these talent rooms or whatever that I'm really not. I don't have much of a filter on me about this job anymore. I used to absolutely. I'd be like, yeah, that's great. but realistically, there's things that you can nitpick at and maybe try and work on and stuff like that. So, but yeah, people have been very receptive to feedback.
By the way, this is an obvious question, but I'll ask it anyway. For people who don't understand, another thing I feel like is always misunderstood about on-camera work is people think, I think they think it becomes almost like you get numb to being on camera and doing that. I always tell people, bro, it doesn't matter how many years you've done. If it's been, say, like a few weeks or a month since you did an event, and you go to an event and you get all set up and you get mic'd up and you go to the desk and it's 1 second before it goes live and they take 3, 2, 1. You get that, you always get that a little electric feeling go through you, right? You always get that feeling like we're here. It's like the, it's live, there's an audience, there's always that thrill, right? It still exists now, true?
Well, I love being the entertainer. I'm actually a very introverted person in real life.
Okay.
Like, when I lived in Finland and Germany and Poland even here, I really haven't made friends, as it were.
Okay.
I don't go out, right? But when it comes to being on stage, on camera, I love being the entertainer. Like, I love being the person that's able to lead the show, able to get things out of people and stuff like that. So for me, that sparks there still absolutely every single time. I love doing it. By the time that I've done all of these shows, it feels natural. So I'm not going to say that I'm numb to it, but I'm just, I know I'm there for a reason. I know I'm good at what I do. So I'm just going to deliver on it. And a lot of my intros and outros and things like that or whatever, I'm just kind of making up on the spot. But I don't hear people doing intros and outros the same way in a lot of games the way I do them. I still listen to other games, CS, League and all this stuff, and they still do the welcome back, guys. Yep. It's time to go into game two. And it's just, yeah, there's so many better ways you can phrase these things. There's so many better ways that you can try and hook people straight away, you know? So I guess I take pride in my craft and try and constantly think of like, okay, how can I do it differently? What can we do differently? And that's where I get my spark from.
Along those lines, I actually can relate to that because in some ways, it's my gift and my curse because I got quite good at on-camera stuff. People just assume I'm naturally like that and that I'm a massive extrovert, whereas like the joke like I was saying to you before this interview is, part of the reason we've never talked, even though there have been loads of StarCraft events, is I was just some weird guy off in the corner not talking to anyone, just coming up, so like, can I do an interview with you? Like, and then just going off to a private room and interviewing that, some StarCraft player who themselves had, who the fuck was that? It's like, oh, some guy from this website. Like, I wasn't trying to be like that, but people assume because you are like, oh, you must be like that all the time. So I always tell people it's causing a weird way for me when I turn the camera on. It's like I am actually allowing like a different part of myself to sort of be, I have a safe area in which I can do that. But when I turn it off, I'm not that guy anymore. I'm someone different. I go back into who I was before. Is it a similar thing for you then when the lights are on, when you're hilarious? Is this like a permission to be someone you aren't in your personal life?
I think I'm this way with my friends. And the problem is that in today's world, I mean, I have a darker sense of humor off camera than I do on camera because you just can't do this.
More right? For the green room there then, right?
Of course.
I do. That's also a real thing as well. All the great jokes are in the green room. They're not on the actual desk anymore. But no, absolutely. It's all good.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yes. But, you know, we still have fun at the desk,
yes,
right?
Yes.
There's family-friendly fun to be had on the desk.
True.
But, yeah, I am... You just... I'm a wrestling fan. So as a wrestling fan, like you always hear this adage of like, you know, you just turn your own personality up to 11 to make your character, right? And that's kind of how I perceive myself to be on camera a little bit. I like character work and I wish I could do more character work actually on broadcasts, but it sort of doesn't fit that well in esports. It's kind of hard to work in and stuff. So, but yeah, That's how I approach things. I had a question for you. Always want to be talent? Because, again, I saw you at so many events as a journalist, but did you always want to eventually become talent?
No, that's the funny thing is like I'm actually one of the rare people who never tried and never applied and never asked. I just sort of like tripped over because what happened was there was just an event in Counter-Strike where it was literally just as simple as I think it was like BSL, the Norwegian player, I had to pull out like last minute, like, you know, a week before because he had like a real world journalism job or something. And they told him, like, oh, sorry, we need you. And then what happened for real was like Carmack or someone just knew that I was going to the event anyway to be a, and he was just like, oh, can you just like just fill in for a few gigs? And then I did, but because this is the era when actually you didn't really have specialists, it was just people who were like play-by-play and generic commentators, they were actually shocked that like, well, yeah, I'd lived the games. I knew like every detail about the players or like, well, actually, yeah, he did that in like the last team he was in, he would play that spot. And people like Joe Miller and Tugger would be like, what the fuck? How do you know that? And I was like, I've just lived this game for like 13 years or something, man. So it was more just that then ESL TV was just like, hey, would you want to work with that? And then I just gradually sort of like fell into it. And then so, but at the time I also, that's why actually I have a bit of a weird career, because I have never had like a big drive to want to be on camera. Like I said, I was intentionally off camera my whole career. I was only a voice, or I was the byline, you know, I wasn't trying to do that angle, which is why I think I'm probably a little bit confusing to some people, because they can't tell, like, am I trying to be like am I an egotist? Do I want to outrage people? I'm just a weird guy, as all. Just one of those nerds in esports that tripped over and it just happened. Yeah.
Fair. Yeah. I like that.
I've got a question for you that goes like this, which is, when you keep doing events and you think of like how long you've been doing them at this point in time, is there ever a point? I'll give you an example. Even though he has literally himself, he's a friend of mine, Zach Sins, even though Rich Lewis has literally said this for 10 plus years, he's violated it every chance he gets, which is he would always do that thing, Clevs. He would go public and private. He'd go, it's a young man's game. You have to understand, we've had our time, you know, it's time for the next year. And he would say all that, right? But then what would happen really is like, that was just something he was convinced himself was. He'd go away for a year or two. Then when he'd get his chance, that they'd be like, we want you back, Richard. Like some movie, you know, where they come up to the log cabin. He'd always say yes to the last gig. He'd always come back out. He'd always get, and I can tell, by the way, when he does the gigs now again, see, he loves it. He's obviously fucking loves it. It's just that's something that's a narrative he's told himself of, like, you know, essentially in his world, you know, there's no old desk horses, I guess, or he thinks you shouldn't do it past a certain age. Is there a time you think eventually where it has to stop for you? Could you be a guy, if everything was cool, your health was great, the games are great, could you do this for 20 more years? Would it be a real thing you could stay engaged with, you think?
I think so, actually. I think the one benefit of being in really in it, like almost every day, is that because you get so many young players coming up always, and you end up hanging out with them at events and stuff like that, it's almost as if the job keeps you young.
Oh, true. I get that. Yeah. Like the logic of getting the puppy with the older dog, and it gives it a spark of life again and keeps it playing and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, what, 36 now, I am of the belief that technically, my talents are not slowing down. Like, I'm not, like, I'm still, well, I'm sharper as a talent now than I have ever been, I would say. Like, because you just kind of assimilate and, you know, you learn and you kind of bring in all these experiences. I guess the only way I would stop at current pace is if all of a sudden your games fizzle out. And then games that you would like to transition to are like, ah, you're too old, you know? Like, do they want the 40-some-year-old guy compared to having a 22-year-old cool dude or whatever? But I'm taking care of myself. I'm looking all right. I'm going to the gym, you know? Like, actually, that was one thing. Like, sometimes you end up seeing yourself on broadcast. You're like, geez, I've got to get in the gym.
Right, so, okay. Sure.
And actually, recently, my photos came back and I was like, I'm looking all right now, you know? So I was happy with that. But yeah, I don't see myself stopping yet, unless, of course, you know, I get another moment like at the start of this year where I'm like, oh, all these frustrations, these are pent up, and I'm just going to sack it off. But not at present. I think I could keep going for a long time.
By the way, one thing I thought was funny at the beginning, I referenced that old Hotbed interview you did, right, back in the day. And one thing, this just shows how different the culture of gaming was. You said the classic thing back then that everyone in the industry thought, which is the worst thing is when someone, like, you meet a girl in a bar and they ask, what do you do? And you go, oh, bloody hell, how do I say this? Because every way I can explain it, I sound like a loser, a nerd, an anorak, a weirdo. And at the time, gaming was not cool. And by the way, forget game. There's no esports. You're never going to say, I'm into esports. And be like, what the fuck are you talking? So here's the funny thing. Imagine that has changed, though. You can have some brilliant opening conversations now about your job, right? And are you proud of your job now? Are you able to sort of be more forthcoming if you meet people in real world, as it were?
Yeah, and I would say actually that I've always kind of been proud of it.
Oh, right.
To be perfectly frank with you, because again, because I love it, and because I'm just like, this is what I feel like I was built for. Like, this is what this is, like, nothing else compares for me. I've always entertained and had those conversations. You have it a lot of times, like on airplanes back in the day, right?
Sure.
You just sit next to someone, they'd start talking, they'd be like, what do you do? Esports. And then suddenly they'd be like, what's that? And then you'd have these conversations. And I think one thing that always resonates with the layman that doesn't know about it is, oh yeah, well, this job has taken me to Singapore, China,
right,
South Korea, America, Brazil. Literally, I've traveled the globe because of this job, getting to talk about video games. Because there are some people that are like, oh, talking about video games, what's that about? But yeah, I mean, even my fiance now, right, we met at Intel Extreme Masters Katowice 2017. So, you know, like, it's this whole journey, this whole trip, and everything about my job has formed my entire life, and it is my life. So I'm very proud of it. I would never change it.
Are you someone where, do you ever, and this might sound like a weird question, but I can ask it because I'd say I relate to it. So it might not be the case. Do you ever actually think, when you think about your public persona and who you are on camera, who you are on Twitter and social media, whatever, do you ever think of it as it's just you? Is it you through a filter? Is there a distinction between Kalaris and James Carroll? Like, put it this way, I say that because I joke, me and Monty used to even say this, is like, sometimes it seems like Thorin is a part of me that does the work, but on Twitter, sometimes it's sort of like a demon that's just summoned up and it goes crazy in my life and sometimes does good things, sometimes does bad things, and then I have to suffer the reality of that. Do you ever think of them as distinct? Are they the same person? But again, is it like wrestling? Is it just turned up to 11? Is there a part of you who's a little bit different?
It's the same person because, again, you know, me off camera is just actually just watching tournaments all the time and trying to get all of this information where I can. And then on camera, I'm just, you know, excited to be talking about the games, basically, to the point where I would like to do more commentary than I currently do. I know that a lot of analysts on desks, oftentimes there are people that would just like to be commentating.
As far as I know, the sad thing is, because I was one of the weird people in Couch Check who wasn't like this. And maybe it's because, like I say, I wasn't that big an extrovert. I didn't want the sound of my own voice. I can tell you almost every analyst I've ever met in every major esport wants to be the color commentator. And actually, most of the desk hosts want to be the analyst or the commentator too. It's just the problem is, and you've got the same problem Richard Lewis does. He can, by the way, he's done loads of analysis gigs with me, but over the years, they just thought he was too good as host. It's almost like a good problem to have. They forced him to do it in a way, but he's just really good at it. So it sounds like you struggle with that a little bit. Like, you have embraced it, you're really good at it, but at the same time, sometimes you'd rather that, like, they didn't tell you were that good at that and hired you as the commentator, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of places know what they're getting from me when it comes to desk hosting, and obviously they understand that there's a certain level that they're going to get, which obviously is very acceptable, and that's cool. I do have the benefit of occasionally getting to commentate PUBG, which is nice, regionally at least. And one of the reasons that that's happened is because a tech girl is oftentimes the host regionally.
Right.
So I get to commentate, which is nice or whatever. But then come the internationals, it's always me back up to desk hosting and stuff. And again, in PUBG Mobile, originally I started out as the desk host, and then Jason Kaplan came in to do more desk hosting stuff, and then I just kind of transitioned to analyst, which is a bit of a shame because now they've kind of like cut the analyst role, desk completely for regional stuff, which again is 10-cent things, and I think that they shouldn't have done it, but they have. So I believe I am very malleable. I believe that I can fit into any role that because of the experiences that I've had in the past, and kind of do well at them. But I kind of love desk hosting still as well, though. I didn't at the beginning, but I kind of love it because I get to be in control of the flow. I get to be in control of the narrative. And because I care about the games, I like to think that the narrative that I build is strong alongside my analysis guys and the commentators. So
yes. By the way, one thing you said earlier where you said you're not really good at making friends and off camera, you're just like a nerd. You're not the guy going drinking. I can also relate to that because I often say there's actually a lot of us that are just nerds in esports where the joke is half of our, also the appeal of working the event or doing a podcast is you just actually get to talk to your friends finally. Like we're all off watching some TV show or having time off or, because that's another thing maybe people can't appreciate. It's actually just tiring just to have lights in your eyes all day or to be on all the time. Like sometimes you really do just want to go to your hotel room and be away from everyone for 8 hours, right?
Yeah, for many years I was there. I mean, all my talent rosters that I worked with knew that as soon as we were done on show, bye-bye Kalaris. Right. See him, he's gone, he's back in his room and he's playing games or something like that. Recently in the past like 4 or 5, 6 years I've been more like, let's hang out a little bit and stuff like that, but it took a while for me to get there because genuinely I just wanted to shut off. I was like, okay, my batteries are expended. I've done a lot of talking today. I've done a lot of talking to you guys today. I love you, but I need to recharge. So that's what a lot of it would do. I infamously, almost, at Katowice's, I'm like a phantom. In StarCraft especially, like, almost everybody that comes around, like the fans, when, they're trying to catch the talent at the end of the show or whatever, Like, I will get a lot of DMs being like, you're the only signature I don't have. Where are you?
Right.
And I just disappear. Like, it helps that I have my car here because I just, like, drive to Katowice.
Right.
I'm like an hour down the road, right, in Krakow. but, yeah, usually it's hard for people to find me, even now, for, like, signatures and stuff. Because I've never read about that. I'm just a nerd, and oftentimes when you meet fans, sometimes they'll, like, some people will even be like nervous to meet you and I'll be shaking or whatever. And I'm like, guys, I'm as nerdy as you are. Like, I am just, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this job. That's why I enjoy the games. So don't need to be nervous about this stuff.
Being as you did all these games, as you said, they, if we were to put up like a map of locations, you've got a very impressive like route around the world. Is there anything that's sort of like a bucket list item you haven't done yet? Maybe, I don't know, maybe you want to cast in a specific, on some sort of a TV channel somewhere, maybe in the UK, I don't know what we would be. Is there something that you've ever thought of like, that would be a cool thing to tick off I've never gotten?
I haven't really thought too much about that because again, I've kind of been everywhere now. I guess a bucket list thing would be the idea that a game that I do got big again, like big.
Oh,
you know what
okay.
I mean? Like, because obviously StarCraft's where it is, and like we have good viewership or whatever for where we're at, and it continues to be what it is. PUBG, you know, continues to have good viewership, and we get to do some cool events and stuff like that, but. Sometimes you're kind of peering over the fence, and as much as, you know, StarCraft had its heyday and stuff like that, we don't have the big arena events anymore, you know? We don't. So it'd be nice to get back to that a little bit, you know? Even recently I saw, like, there was, like, 3 or 4 huge arenas going on. I think Fortnite just did an arena. I think Apex just finished things off for their thing. Obviously CS just had Cologne as well.
Yeah, massive, yeah.
And I haven't done a big arena in a long
time.
Right,
you want one of those ones like Alexis, like 16,000 people. It's like a giant crowd. You want that vibe again?
Yeah, because I feel like I am born for this. And I like being able to desk host in that and kind of do throws and, you know, I mean, or even commentate, but that's probably not happening. Like, but probably the desk host. To be able to get to do that again in an arena would be very, it'd be fun again. It'd be fun.
I've got a weird question, which goes like this. If you could go back in time and only be a commentator, no one even gives you a chance on a desk. Would you do it in the gamble that you just get to be the biggest commentator? Because some would say you've got a happy middle ground at the moment. You got to be the desk host. That's allowed you to move between different games. That probably even gives you more options. What would you do? Would you go back and gamble it all to just be the biggest commentator in StarCraft? I picked StarCraft there because I think it's safe enough that if you say yes, they won't say, you're not hosting anymore. Like, you're okay on that one, I feel like, at this point in time.
Yeah. Oh, that's tough because it's just a different energy that you get to do. It's just a different, it's very different commentating to desk hosting. Because again, you get to be in the game. Like, you are part of the game at that point and you're part of the legacy of the game at that point. Like, I mean,
were you one of the people who ever used to get into the whole thing? I know a lot of commentators are like this, where part of it is another addiction they have is when you have that moment where you get the iconic line or you feel like you really brought together the more. Was that appealing to you?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Because, I mean, even now, if you look at StarCraft II YouTube, the most watched StarCraft II series of all time is Maru versus Life from Intel Extreme Masters Taipei, and it's me and Apollo casting it.
Ah, right.
It's got like 1 million, some million or whatever views on YouTube or whatever. So there's like those kinds of things that, you know, if you do a good job, are going to live on and kind of like exist. Because I actually think, as much as I really love being the desk host, you don't really get much praise.
Sure.
It's a bit of a thankless job. Occasionally you'll get people saying you're brilliant at it. And even just recently I got a lovely message from one of my, by extension, co-workers' girlfriends who was saying, I'm surprised we didn't lose him to bigger games,
right.
You know, which that's a lovely thing to say. But you don't get it often as a desk host. I think my answer to your question is no. I wouldn't go back and do just the commentary. I think as much as I kind of accidentally fell into desk hosting, I think it has grown me as a talent. I think it has again afforded me the opportunities like you're referencing, the ability to be able to transition between these games, and I don't think I could give that up, and I like the fact that I can drive the show. I can be the person that pushes it forwards. because I think I'm good at that.
I thought what we could do is, I usually for pro players sometimes do a fun like quick fire round where it's about like teammates they've had or something. I thought we could do a similar thing, and you can just pick talent you've worked with for it, right? So the premise goes, give me a name as the answer, but then a reason why as well. So the question goes, I'm going to modify from what it would be for a player. So for a player, I normally ask, who was the most skilled teammate you have? Because then it really puts me, you know, like you have to, you know, in your case, who was the most skilled talent do you think you've worked with in any game? You can pick. Who is it?
Oh my God.
It's a big one.
The most skilled talent I've ever worked
Obviously,
with.
Purely for your subjective reason as well. You decide the reasons. So who would it be?
Oh, that's brutal. Because there are so many people that are good at what they do.
Does someone stand out though? Is there someone really was like exceptional?
Okay. I'm going to give you an answer, but probably not what you think. I'm going to pick, at current pace, I am going to pick Rotterdam.
Okay. Because. Okay. He'll love that answer already, I can tell you that. But go on, give me the reason why.
I think for StarCraft II, his analytical mind, as well as the way in which his excitement is infectious when he's commentating the game, like, and his memory on games that have happened 8-9 years ago.
Right.
Like, he is like an encyclopedia when it comes to it. I think, but for him, it might just be StarCraft. I don't know, because he doesn't do other games, right? But like the way in which he injects himself into StarCraft 2, I think he's extremely skilled at it. So for that, I'm going to go with Roddy.
Okay. And then normally I ask who were the most clutch teammate, but I've got a similar variation. Who do you think is the talent who's the best under pressure? Because I'll tell you what, you know, similar how I said before, we all get that thrill when we go live. There's some really amazing people who on camera are awesome, but I can tell you that knee under that desk is going fucking like a jackhammer before we go live. So who is the best under pressure? Who's the one who's just really cool? Who fits this bill?
I'm going to have to go back to StarCraft people. Well, the thing is that the StarCraft roster as a whole is fantastic. Like, they do not get enough praise for their abilities, right? And obviously, you know, they've been doing it for a long time, and you get things like the esports are always come around or whatever, and are constantly overlooked, which is ridiculous. But anyway, I'm going to go in terms of somebody that I could always just throw anything at, like, and just know that they're going to be there to be able to catch anything. A lot of those names come up from StarCraft, but I'm going to have to go with, I guess, Pig.
Pig is...
You know Jared from Australia? I think he's fantastic at being able to roll with anything. And I think what he's also done very well is being able to... He has put many eggs in many baskets, but all for StarCraft, right? Like the content that he creates, the way in which he's able to answer my questions as well as elaborate on some of those scenarios. I just think the StarCraft talent across the board is excellent. So I guess it's me just gushing about them.
I mean, as you say, they've done it more years as well, though, so they have a natural advantage. Okay, so similar one. This can just be the same. Who is the funniest talent? Obviously, by the way, the secret caveat there is it can be in the green room if you want, but who is the funniest talent? Who would it be?
Can I pick some? Can I tell you who the funniest talent was?
Go on.
In Control, Jeff.
Oh, for sure. Of course. Yeah.
It's funny because,
he's just a naturally funny guy though, isn't he? Like, you want to know something funny? I once told Richard Lewis this on a show as well. I actually genuinely, I'll tell you a moment when I actually also realized, like, it's sad he's not here, is bro, people thought, no, I have a really good sense of humor in this sense. Like, I don't, if someone makes a funny joke about me, I'll laugh too. I would have loved to see how he would have roasted me for the IME Sports Roast. He would have done something fucking hilarious, bro. That's exactly the sort of person you want to know what they'd say. Yeah. Anything that happens, you just think, what would they have said to it?
Jeff was unbelievably funny off screen and then also unbelievably funny on screen, which is something very difficult to find, right? There was no filter with Jeff, and also it's funny as a desk host, especially because he was one of the best people to have on desk, but also one of the worst people to have on desk, because controlling In Control was so difficult. I don't know, I've watched so many games, I've worked with so many other talent, there's been nobody like Jeff. And I think it comes back to the fact that he was incredibly intelligent and just, I mean, back in university and stuff like that, he was on like the debate teams that. So he was just a natural fit for just limitless charisma and funny times. He was,
What about, and normally I do it, who's the best teammate in the sense of like as a teammate? So in similar lines, who's the best like actually like syncing up with you or coordinating or maybe even sacrificial or something? Who's the person on the desk who like maybe they're like a glue guy type person, they make it all work together? Who would that fit?
Actually, I can go out of StarCraft for this one because when we get the opportunity to do three-man desks, I actually think that our three-man desk in PUBG of me, Avenger, and Toffees it's the best setup for that game. Like, we bounce off each other really, really well. I barely even have to ask any questions, to be perfectly honest, as the desk host when it comes to that three-man setup, because I know how everybody's going to riff off one another. But we just barely ever get to do it anymore. It was great to do it at EWC because ESL appreciates the idea of a three-man desk, as it should be normal for PUBG. But yeah, so, I mean, maybe one day I get it back properly, but... Yeah, I'm going to go with that, just to kind of step out of just exclusively StarCraft for a moment.
The last one is, who do you think is the most underrated talent you've worked with?
Who's the most underrated? In terms of who could transcend a game and go elsewhere and be successful potentially, and
could be, yeah.
And like, I think actually, Zombie Grub is unbelievably good, very, very good, in StarCraft. She has worked on her craft, far, far more than people I think realize publicly. And I think actually she's gone on record once or twice to talk about like some of the, voice training that she's done and things like that. And because I think for girl commentators and talent and stuff like commentators, especially play by play, there was a problem for some women in that their voice would get too high pitched in hype moments.
Yes.
Which oftentimes can be a little bit grating to audiences, and that it's a fair assessment of the situation. So what some had to do is go back and just elevate their current voice vocal tone to just, or increase the pace and be able to kind of like work that into player by play.
Right.
And I think Zombie Grub, not only information wise, but also kind of her technique is very underrated. I've told her multiple times she could go into other games and be very successful.
Right.
So because of that, I'm going to pick her.
By the way, to touch back on something we were discussing earlier, where we were contrasting actually like real world sports and people who work talent there with esports. Obviously, most people, anytime they reference that, use it to actually bash esports talent and be like, you're not as professional, you know, you're not as clean cut, you didn't do this thing this way. I'll go the other way. I'm with you. I actually think there are areas we are better. Like, I can tell you, by the way, when we worked E-League, it was blowing their producers' minds that like Richard Lewis didn't want an auto cue. They didn't get that. They couldn't understand it, Klaus, because you have to understand the people who do the NBA show, they live off that auto cue, bro. Their whole skill is making it look like they're not reading for an auto cue. And they didn't get that Richard could just do this on the fly because he'd done like 70 lands or something, you know. And I think similarly, like some of the areas that we don't actually get enough credit for as talent in esports is things like that. It's like the back and forth impromptu banter. It's like, as you say, being able to do something unique with a throw that wasn't even planned with the producer. He didn't even know you were going to take that. Some of these areas, actually, people don't necessarily know. There isn't that actual sort of like bandwidth within real world broadcasts on TV sometimes. Actually, we get to sort of play in a way that I don't think people understand. It's kind of dope in a way, actually. The freedom you can get in esports is amazing, right?
Yeah, completely agree. I see more and more esports talent using auto cue or teleprompter. And I'm always surprised when I see it, but I guess it is just like it's a normal thing for traditional TV.
Yes.
But for me, like a lot of, again, like big intros, big outros, like if I'm not making them on the fly, which I try to make them like epic and grand or whatever, or trying to sell the story and stuff like that, I just memorize them. I just think about them on the fly. And again, a lot of them have to come down to the second if you're working with things that are like the EWC production we just worked with as well. So, but you just do it. I couldn't imagine working with a teleprompter. I've had to do it once or twice, and every single time I've done it, I've almost felt like disingenuous a little bit.
Right.
Because why would I need it? Like, why would I need to script out a segment when I can just feel out the segment and kind of adapt with the segment? Yeah, it makes no sense to me.
Right, this is a classic one, but I just think it always has an interesting angle. If you could go back in time and meet Kalaris at the end of 2011 and just tell him, like, you know, we won't make it, you could give him all the advice. You can just give him, like, a piece of advice. What would a good piece of advice you could have given yourself be?
To buy more Bitcoin than you already did.
Well, that's a good, like, okay. That's true. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything esports related, though?
Let me think. Turn your limiter off quicker. Like, I think there were, in my first couple of years, there were moments where I was like holding back because, like, in commentary, right? But I mean, this can apply to most roles. I was holding back in terms of like excitement and stuff like that because I thought maybe people would think you're being silly or like this kind of stuff or whatever. So turn that off. But also, don't be as serious. Don't be as serious about things, because realistically, what people actually want from an esports broadcast is entertainment.
Yes,
is for you to be inviting, to bring the person in, so that I mean, a lot of people call it like parasocial relationships, right? Like people are watching and they almost think that you're their friends, so much so that when you meet fans or whatever, they don't really introduce themselves to you.
Yes,
they know who you are.
Yes,
but they don't say their name, and you're like,
yes.
Hi, I'm James, and I extend my hand, and I really sure. wish they'd tell me their name. I'm trying to bait it out of them, but they might just assume in that moment that you know them too, because the parasocial relationship of a broadcast, because you're trying to invite them in, is so strong. So yeah, be more relaxed about shows. And I only learned this when I became a desk host after the first year of desk hosting, because my first year was like stress, stress, stress. What if everything goes wrong? Everything's on fire. Oh, I'm going to look stupid. But as soon as you realize eventually it's just to relax and roll with the punches, you become a better talent across the board.
Along these lines, then, obviously we hope you keep doing many more years of events and working whatever games you like, blah, blah, blah. If for some reason your career ended today, what would you want your legacy to be in esports?
I gave a shit about the games that I did. That I actually truly cared about my games, for sure, like, and cared about putting on a good show, or at least, you know, trying to invite people in to show them that we're having a fun, good show, and trying to build up the players, because it sounds cliche and it sounds bollocks, but genuinely, I just want to make stars out of our players. Like, the fact that, you know, you get people like Serral or Clem looking unbelievable in StarCraft, or in PUBG, you've got like Tiggleton, or back before that, we had a guy called Uber who was arguably the GOAT at the time, you know, just trying to build up the players, because that's what it's kind of about. In the end, esports is all a marketing thing anyway, right? For the games themselves. But if we can create some like stars along the way, that's kind of what I want to do in esports, because I love them. So yeah, very cliche.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I will say a secret to life if you're young is things that seem cliche is just when everyone says it, but people say it in a way that's disingenuous. When you believe, it's the same as like someone saying, I love you. You can say that a million times where it doesn't mean anything. It'll mean nothing. But when someone says it and you know they mean it, it means everything, doesn't it? So I know what you mean, but in a way it's cliched for a reason. Like these are real wisdoms. These are real insights into your career, right?
Yeah, no, you're right.
At the end of this interview, do you have a final message? Do you want to thank anyone or say hello to anyone?
Hi. Well, thank you for having me on. Obviously, this has, again, literally been our first chat ever, and I've had a pleasure over time. It's been really good. And I would like to say thank you to everybody for tuning into our shows. Thank you to the people that send me nice messages. I don't get them often because, again, Desk Host doesn't really get much, but I very much appreciate that. And I just hope my esports that I'm currently covering can continue to last, because I'm having a blast doing them.
Everyone needs a support network, and mine is, of course, my Patreon community. the Scrumanati, who in many ways, they're the Sonny to my share, saying, I got you, babe. So this video and all the others on my channel were kindly supported by the following names: Ahmed Haju, Mac Pugnacho Rakula, Adam Tomlin, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tosh, Toucan, and you know it. Jerky's Minion, my main man, always going to be referenced, one of the best patrons of all time. Would you like to ask a question in my AMA? Maybe you want to suggest a topic or a guest to see on my channel. Do you want teasers? Find out who the upcoming Reflections and Talk to Thorin interviews are. Maybe you want to do one of those long discussions where you get to set the topics we talk about. Well, if any of these or others appeal to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrumanati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.